You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
TGIF, as they say. Happy Friday. Well, I guess the protests are still continuing. whatever, man. I wonder if things had been in the reverse, if you would still see people taking to the streets and protesting. Well, probably not, because you wouldn't have George Soros funding the whole operation. But it just shows how stupid Americans are. What the hell is the difference? What the hell is the difference? Except, you know, window dressing. Is that all you care about, America? I don't like what's in the display window. That's all that matters to these mindless, stupid asses. They don't have the mental wherewithal to know how, when, and by whom they're getting screwed, or that they're even getting screwed at all, for the most part. Oh, guys, we're in a lot of trouble. And once again, not because we have scum running our country. We're in trouble because we have a bunch of asses that comprise the bulk of the population of this country who just don't get it. They don't have a clue. The fact that they buy the election process, you know, that they think there's some legitimacy to it, that it's going to bring some hope. Although I have to say, a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people say that they don't like either candidate, but they still fall for that same mantra.
Well, we just got to pick the lesser of the two evils.
That cognitive dissonance, they just don't want to come to terms with the fact that things are that bad, that it's all rigged. We're offered, you know, every election, two already hand-picked sellouts. They just can't come to terms with that, because
that's a conspiracy theory.
When has this world not been run by conspirators, ladies and gentlemen? You see how powerful propaganda is? Once bullshit is set in place, it's so virtually impossible for people to extricate themselves from it. And so it is with religion. Same thing, same exact thing, run by the same people. Once that shit has taken root, just try, you know, it's like a tree. You can't grab a tree and pull it out of the ground. Shit, you can barely do that with some weeds. The roots are so deep, you'll sit there and yank all day long, and all you do is get blisters on your hand. That thing ain't going anywhere. You gotta kill it. You gotta put some poison on it and kill the damn thing. So it is with religion, guys. You can't. And by the way, that's a good illustration. That's a good illustration. That is exactly how religion works. It's like a toxic weed. You can't pull it out. All you can do is kill it. But you know what? The roots still remain for a long time. It takes a long time for those roots to rot in the ground so that you can see no trace that that deadly, toxic weed was even there in the first place. So it is with me, guys. Over the years, it's taken a while to fully extricate myself from that bullshit. When I first finally had to admit to myself that, holy shit, this book is a frickin' scam, what really helped with that is me becoming aware of the tribe and their shenanigans. Had I not discovered that, I probably wouldn't have seen the Bible as the toxic poison that it is. I might have recognized it has problems and inconsistencies, but I wouldn't have developed the absolute vile hatred that I have for it had I not recognized the source, you know, where it came from, what these bastards have been up to down through the centuries, why it was, you know, pawned off on us in the first place. I wouldn't have developed a hatred for it. I wouldn't have appreciated how evil the whole damn thing is. But even though I recognized years ago that it was a piece of horse shit, it has taken quite some time for me to fully eradicate it from me, you know, from my life and its effects. So it's like dropping poison on, you know, on a toxic weed. I killed the weed years ago, but the roots were still there. Traces of the presence of that deadly weed were still there. As time went on, you know, I had to rethink so many things. Over the years, I've had to let go of other beliefs that I hadn't really thought of. But as time went on, it's like, oh yeah, geez, that's, I got to let go of that too. That came from the Bible. Well, for example, the idea of us having a freedom of choice. Now, I haven't fully gone over to the other side to say that we never have a freedom of choice, because we do consciously think about decisions. In fact, we're at constant war with ourselves, aren't we? We find that we do things we wish we didn't. And so we have to make a conscious effort sometimes to do things that might come natural to us. Like for me, I have a bad temper. It doesn't manifest itself in a physical way. Well, once it did, that was called for, and that's a good thing. You know, sometimes you need to get physical. But, you know, you want to keep that under control, and thank heavens I've been able to do that almost without exception. But I do run off with the mouth. You know, that's one of my big problems. It's a bad weakness. I need to work on that. But anyway, where was I going with the temper thing now? God damn it. Completely left me now. Jesus Christ, I hate when I do that. I have not been getting enough sleep lately. It's terrible. I go to bed at a decent time. I intend to get a nice night's rest. But what happens? I grab the goddamn Kindle, and that's it. There goes my nice night's rest. And once I start reading, you know, if it gets really good, and it usually does, the adrenaline starts pumping, and it's like drinking coffee, you know, you just can't get to sleep. So I was awake most of the night reading, and now, of course, I pay for it in the morning. But anyway, yeah, I completely forgot where I was just going with that. My mind just went into neutral. I don't know if that's a senior moment or... No. Completely left me now. God damn it. I was going to make a good point, too. Jesus Christ. Anyway. Yeah, I totally forgot where I was going with that. Son of a bitch. But, religion, guys, it is so... Oh, that's what... Wait a minute now. I think it's coming back. Shit. Yeah. It took me a while to completely extricate from myself the influences that religion had had on me. I forgot now, though, what the exact I was going to give an example now. What the hell was that example? Jesus Christ. But, you know, because religion affects so many parts of your life, it does. It influences the way you interpret everything around you. This is why it's so goddamn toxic. When you realize how arbitrary a lot of the commands in that book are, like, you know, a lot of the condemnations, like it's fetish with, you know, anti-homosexuality. I'm not pro-homosexuality by any means, but I'm also not anti to the point where I condemn everybody who's gay. No, I'm not a goddamn homophobe. That's what Christians are. They're homophobes. They condemn across the board everybody that falls under that banner, when in fact, I have to say most of them, certainly most of the ones that I've ever run into, are not rabid militant gays. And they're not arrogant about their homosexuality. In fact, a great many of them are not proud of it and wish they weren't. They wish they weren't. And yet they're condemned. So, you know, that's what it was. This idea of freedom of choice. All right, I hope I don't forget my point now. God damn it, my mind is so fried this morning. I haven't fully gone over to the other side to say that, you know, we have no freedom of choice. No, because we can consciously make decisions, and we're not always able to carry them out. You know, if we decide, for example, for me, if I decide, okay, I'm not going to get mad at this person because I don't think they're a real asshole. They're just ignorant. So I'm going to be patient with them because they don't understand. You know, like that religious caller. It's so easy to get mad with people like that, and they do frustrate the shit out of me. But at the same time, you know, I got to remember I was one of them at one point, and, you know, the fact that he still listens to my show, there's hope for the guy. I think he really, deep down inside, wants to know what's wrong with his belief system, what's wrong with his holy book, his God, you know, or else he wouldn't even tune in the first place. And, you know, I don't want to get mad at him because I don't want to discourage him. I actually want him to continue to listen. Unfortunately, though, every time he calls up, it's always with a, you know, classic condemning voice. He can't help himself, though. He really can't, guys. There's a good example of he has no freedom of choice, a good example of the lack of freedom of choice. He is only responding to his programming. But I can't say that we totally have no freedom of choice, because there are things we make decisions about. He has the potential to make a decision to stop believing in the horse shit that's been crammed down his throat and up his ass all his life. He can make that decision, but there's so many factors going against him that stand in his way from doing that. So many years of programming, of neurological connections, bad neurological connections that have been made, that it is so hard for him to root around. He can make a choice. He has the potential, but it's most likely he won't because of the years of conditioning and programming. I won't say he never will. There's always a chance, but it, you know, unfortunately, his chances are pretty slim. You know, I was one of those rare exceptions, because I've always been a rebel at heart. I guess it was just a matter of time before I eventually snapped out of it and got my head out of my ass. So I can't say that we have no freedom of choice at all, but I am definitely leaning more and more in the direction that, for the most part, we don't have a choice in how we conduct ourselves. That our actions are mostly predetermined by nurture and nature, predetermined by, you know, our very nature, by our genetics, as well as the way we were nurtured, the way we were brought up, the way we were taught to respond to things. That plays so much of a role in our actions that, to a large extent, we really don't have any say. Which is another reason why our prison system is such a goddamn fraud. There's no, well, almost no reform involved. Sometimes, yeah, some prisons have a little bit of, you know, they offer programs to help rehabilitate prisoners. But for the most part, guys, that's not what happens. It's not what happens at all. You just sit and rot for months and years on end. And then when they let you out, what happens? You go right back to it. Never mind rehabilitate you, you know, to teach you how to be a moral person. They don't even train you. Some prisons do. But for the most part, they don't even train you with any skills so that when you get out of there, you have something, you know, to provide you a way of earning a living so you don't go back to a life of crime. For the most part, they shove you right back on the street so you can pick up right where you left off before you wound up in the goddamn slammer. How the hell does that solve anything? Of course, when you realize our prison system isn't designed to resolve anything, that only makes goddamn sense, doesn't it? But how people accept this bullshit, how they accept anything in this society is beyond me. Oh, they don't want to reform criminals. They love criminals. They're criminals themselves. Just like they don't want to take guns away from criminals. They only want to take it away from law-abiding citizens. Take weapons away from them. And take away their right to bear arms. They don't care about criminals having arms, guys. They don't. But anyway, that's one of the... I'm rambling again. That's one of the examples, you know, of how religion took so long. And I'm sure there's still things that I'm clinging to that I haven't even thought about yet that are influenced by that bullshit book that had its roots dug so deep in me, I couldn't pull the toxic weed out. I could only poison it and kill it. The weed is dead, but its roots are still there. Well, I hope they're not, but I'm... You know, over the years, I found that, oh, some of them still are there. I thought I was able to dig the whole thing out, but nope, I didn't dig deep enough. There's still some traces of roots left, you know. It's so hard to pull people away from religion, guys. The longer you've been in it, the deeper those roots dig. And the harder it is to extricate it. Not only to extricate it from you, but to extricate you from it. I've often said, you know, it's one thing for a person to leave, you know, religion. It's another thing for religion to leave them. You might physically, you know, remove yourself from the cult that you belong to, and even from the religion itself. You've removed yourself from it. But it hasn't removed itself from you yet. That doesn't happen all at once. Even though you completely renounce it, you recognize it as a fraud, and you curse it to the lowest hell, it still is going to have its residual effects on you for years to come. I'm not talking about, you know, abandoning the good moral standards. No. I'm talking about the false ideologies, the phony bullshit interpretations of reality that fantasy book has instilled in you. It takes a long time to get rid of it. Anyway, enough of that. Let's stop rambling here. Back to our notes. In Plato's Law, remember we were talking yesterday about, you know, all the references in Plato's writings to this world system that he anticipated, that he looked forward to, a system of complete despotic control, a system that would ultimately destroy the family. What does that sound like? And where do you think Karl Marx got it from, ladies and gentlemen? Ultimately, from this bastard. But where did this bastard get it from? Where did he get it from? That's the question. Anyway, he wrote in his Laws, he said, if there exist laws under which men have been reared up and which, by the blessing of heaven, have remained unaltered for many centuries, so that there exists no recollection or report of their ever having been different from what they now are, then the whole soul is forbidden by reference and fear to alter any of the things established of old. The lawgiver must devise a means whereby this shall be true of his state. Did you catch that? That's very interesting. He's implying here that if a law has been around for centuries on end, that means it must be true, because you can't have a law in place that so many people follow for so many centuries and be wrong. And then he says, such an idea must be established by the rulers of the state. The lawgiver must devise a means whereby this shall be true of his state. Did you catch that? You don't need to have laws that have actually been around for centuries on end and been believed. All you need to do is create the illusion that such laws have been around and been tried, tested, and true. Well, what is the Torah, ladies and gentlemen? What is the Torah? You know, there's a story, the Old Testament, of King, what the hell's his name now? One of the heebie-jeebie kings. Shit. Here goes the senile moment again. Oh, come on. Begins with an H. He built the underground aquifer there. What the hell was his name? Anyway, there's a story of him, I don't know, 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel. Mixed in with all the begats, the most, by far, the most interesting part of the Old Testament, chapter after chapter of this one beget that one beget this one. Anyway, oh, God damn it, what the hell was his name? It's going to bug the hell out of me now. Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, there's a story of him finding a copy of the Book of the Law. Some think it was specifically the Book of Deuteronomy. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He finds this old copy hidden away somewhere, I don't know, in a back room of the temple or something, that hadn't been seen for centuries. It was tucked away under a bunch of debris. And it describes how he was shocked. He never knew about these things, about the law of God. Nobody knew. All of Israel was ignorant of this book of the law. You see my point? This book was created at that time by this king and his little minions, or, you know, the priests. Perhaps he was the minion of the priests himself. Whatever. Anyway, they created this goddamn thing. They brought it out in the desert and buried it for a few days, got it wet, got it stained, rubbed it in the, you know, in the mud, blah, 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 made it look old, and they said, ah, look, we have found an original copy of, you know, this was written by Moses himself centuries ago. This was the law that our forefathers kept for centuries on end. We just forgot about it, but now the Lord in his mercy and love and compassion has inspired the king to look in a secret place, and he found it. Here it is now. We must follow this. This is what Plato was talking about, guys. What do you think Plato learned this from? He was told about the importance of creating the illusion of an old set of laws that was rediscovered. And we need to follow it, because this was followed by our ancestors for centuries. It's not contestable. It stood the test of time. And so it is today, ladies and gentlemen. Bible dupes believe the Bible, mainly because they've been told that this is so ancient, it goes back so long. Well, we know it's at least 20, 2,500 years old. But being ancient doesn't make it legitimate, guys. Look all through the centuries how what stupid asses society was. You know, believing there were giant sea monsters that would swallow you in one bite if you ventured too far out. You look at all the horseshit they believed for centuries on end. Because something remains popular for centuries, far from being a sign that it's legitimate and we need to follow it, that tells me it's something we need to put under the microscope and hold in great suspicion. Because the masses have always been asses. When the masses fall for something, that's an indication you need to stay away from it. You need to not embrace it. Look at today. Look at the bullshit the whopping bulk of this country's population falls for. You want to be accounted among that that crowd? Jesus Christ. But that's how most people work. They want to be accounted with the bulk of the population. And their opinions are totally swayed by it. Which is another reason why I'm surprised they didn't rig it for Shillery to win. The very fact that they were saying she was ahead in the polls by 3 or 4 points, that they usually say that to manipulate how the public votes. Oh, most people are going with her? Okay, well, I'll just, you know. You know, it might be that they actually didn't manipulate this election in the sense of, you know, not toying with the results and letting the actual people decide for themselves, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I guess they figured whatever agenda they want to get accomplished over the next 4 years, they could get it through either one. It didn't really matter. So we're not going to rig it. There isn't one we want in more than the other this time. They're both our ass kissers, but there isn't one who's kissing our ass any better than the other. We can get what we want through as easily with one as the other. So maybe they didn't rig it at all. Maybe even they were surprised. Ah, son of a gun, they picked puppet B instead of puppet A. Even though we tried to manipulate them with those phony numbers. Who knows? Anyway, guys, short break. It's raining in the park meantime. Sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many.
Here is Jewish author Douglas Rushkoff on why Jews are dangerous.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation-state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real. And that's very upsetting to people.
We'll be right back.
right, guys, welcome back. But that quote I just read from Plato, very, very interesting. On the one hand, he's talking about how, you know, laws that have been around for centuries, those are sacred and untouchable. You must follow them simply because they've been, you know, believed in for so long. Well, that's bullshit right there. There's no truth to that statement at all. But then he goes on to say, he's acting like, oh, if you have such a set of laws, why, they're sacred and untouchable. But then he goes on to say, if you don't, you need to create the illusion that you do, because people will follow them if they think that they're old and have been around for centuries. What a huckster. Plato was a piece of shit. But why was he a piece of shit? Because he was being influenced by pieces of shit. That's why. And we know who they were. His writings are loaded with references to a future world tyrannical system, ladies and gentlemen. Where did he get that idea from? In the book, Plato and the Creation of the Hebrew Bible, author Russell Merkin, what kind of a name is that? Anyway, he wrote that Plato, in order to exert complete control over a given population, believed that strategies needed to be devised that would, quote, erase the nation's memory of any other way of life, like erasing a tablet and starting with a clean slate. Imagine that. Plato was all for that, folks. Destroying history, or your perception of it. Erasing the nation's memory, brainwashing them of any other way of life. Doesn't the Bible do that? You bet your sweet ass it does. The Bible destroys the believer's perception or acceptance or legitimization of any other philosophy of life, any other way of life, and instills in the mind of the dupe the idea that its views are the only ones. There are none other. That's the Bible's most commonly repeated refrain. I am the Lord. I am the one you should listen to. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. If they speak not according to this word, it's because there's no light in them. Nothing else matters. All other philosophies are either dirt, or if they sound good, it's only because they were copied from this original source. So what Plato is describing here is exactly what the Bible does, exactly what the tribe has always done, not just by, you know, propaganda in the media and the education system, but the Bible itself. All of these things, all of them are, they are tools of propaganda, and all of them accomplish the same thing. Brainwashing, preventing you from critically analyzing anything. You can't critically analyze anything when your belief system is based around a fairy tale book, which itself you've never critically analyzed. Jesus Christ, man. Anyway, this quote continues here. The author goes on to say, in order to erase the cultural memories of the past and replace them with new memories, the rulers would exercise complete control over the nation's education, literature, public speech, and cultural contacts with other nations. Holy shit. Notice, they're not trying to stop cultural contacts with other nations. They want you to have that contact, but only because they have control over those other nations now. That's why they want them all stirred together in the pot. They wouldn't want contact with other nations if those nations weren't under their control already. Now that they are, yes, stir them up. They wanted Christianity divided, right? That's why they created the Protestant Reformation, really a revolution. But now that they have complete control over all the churches, now they want them united. Look at the pendulum game they play, guys. Divide them one minute, unite them the next, as long as they have control over them. They lost control over Islam. They had control over it for the longest time. They've now lost control over it. So now they're dividing Islam, and they're also pinning Christians against Muslims because Muslims are a threat for them. A lot of Muslims know the game. They know the score, or at least partially, anyway. They at least know that Zionism is an evil force in the world, but a lot of them still accept the Jew God, the Jew book, to some degree or other. But you know what I'm saying. They're a problem for them. So they're turning on them or turning Christians on them. But, you know, that wouldn't have been the case a few centuries ago because they were totally in bed with them. Christians were the problem. So they were pinning Muslims against Christians and dividing Christians against themselves. Look at the games they frickin' play, guys. But this quote here, oh, is it ripe with significance for our current age? Plato was all about destroying the cultures of nations. He knew that that was a vital, important part that needed to be played to bring about a globally cohesive system of tyrannical governmental control. You had to destroy a nation's culture, keep them separate from other nations, so they can't see that, oh, hey, wait, these guys got it better than we do. We've been told we have the best system, but look at the one they have. This is why they've gone after third world leaders that have aspirations of freeing their people from enslavement to things like the World Bank and the IMF, you know. The minute there's any hint of it, they crush them under their feet. But once they did that, once the CIA and or the U.S. military went in and took out that leader and replaced him with a compliant puppet, then they don't care now about stirring them in with the rest of the pot. It's okay now to collaborate with these nations because now they're under our control. They're not going to have a bad influence on you by showing you that there's a better way than the horseshit system that is being offered. That's what Plato was talking about here. Don't associate with other nations unless they're part of the game, unless they've already had their culture frickin' destroyed and have their borders wide open to dilute and destroy their cultures. Look at this. God damn it. And he said this could be accomplished and would be accomplished once the rulers have control over the nation's education, literature, public speech, and cultural contacts with other nations. You can have contact as long as they're in control of that contact and have control of that other nation. We're now living in an age, folks, where these things are coming to fruition before our very goddamn eyes. Things that were in place, or at least were on paper, you know, laid out as their blueprint 2,500, or well, in this case, 2,300 years ago, goes back before that. But, you know, since the time of Plato, 2,300 years ago, this stuff is now coming into play. Incredible. This author goes on to say, a key part of the educational program found in both Plato's Republic and Laws was the strict control of literature. Don't forget, at that time, literature was the main avenue of influence on society. No TVs, no you know, no internet, no mass communications. So printed media, literature, was the way to influence, to manipulate That's what needed to be gotten control of. He goes on to say, Plato's program of censorship encompassed all the arts with detailed specifications of what constituted permissible poetry, prose, drama, comedy, music, dance, song, and prayer. How interesting. I don't know when I'm going to get to it, but I have a very interesting series coming up on early CIA influence, not only on music, that's obvious, you know, the whole Laurel Canyon scene, but the arts, ladies and gentlemen, and popular novels. The CIA, very early on, in fact, even before the CIA, going back to the days of the OSS, intelligence agencies, tribal controlled intelligence agencies, have always had their fingers in that in those pies. Anything dealing with, you know, popular culture, they've always taken an interest in that and exerted an influence on that. Even art, people would say, well, why would they do that? Why? Because art has a powerful influence. Anything like this, anything that's popular that people like to go and to museums and look at, you know, very powerful influence. Not just the written word, not just the spoken word, not just television and radio, art as well. When I say the CIA or intelligence agencies, I'm talking about the tribe. It's the same goddamn thing. They use the intelligence agencies to do this for them. But at the same time, they also own all the publishing houses, don't they? They own the goddamn entertainment industry, and on it goes, for a very good reason. From the word go, our entertainment industry, Hollywood and so forth, was under their control. They created the goddamn thing. Why? Why? Because they know the power it has. Everywhere they've gone, in every nation throughout the centuries, that's one of the first goddamn things they did, if not the first, was seeing to it that they took control of all avenues of public information, ladies and gentlemen. And you could say that, you know, they did that because they're following the playbook of Plato. Oh, no. Plato himself was following their playbook. The quote goes on, Plato deemed every public performance an educational and rhetorical opportunity for the rulers to instill the proper citizen virtues in the gathered populace. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. You know, I need to include this quote, actually. I need to do that. I'm going to have to read this again when I cover that in the CIA. Manipulation of the art scene. Yeah. This is such an important quote. This shows us, guys, that this kind of mentality didn't just arise since 1948 when the CIA was created. This shit, or actually 47, this shit goes back to ancient frickin' times, baby. Ancient frickin' times. They've been doing this for a long, long, long time. Manipulating all avenues of culture, including the arts, plays, and in our modern context, movies, television shows, dramas, you bet, you bet. Why does Hollywood add so much dramatization, even to movies that are supposed to be true? So often you see a movie and it says, based on true events. Why not go out of their way if it's supposed to be based on a true story? Why just base it on a true story? Why not try to have it as accurate according to the known historical facts as you can get it? because they want to use it to manipulate you in some way. So they're going to add their own little sugar and spice to it to fuck with you and manipulate you the wrong way. That's why they do it. Quote continues, by carefully shaping the people's understanding of their own cultural history, an illusion was deliberately fostered that the citizenry had lived under their utopian government and system of laws since the dawn of time. Look at this, guys. Holy shit. That's the Bible for you once again, isn't it? These set of laws not only come from God, but they were given long, long ago for mankind to follow. And yet, you know, people have often wondered, well, what about those living in isolated areas like remote tribes in South Africa or South America or in the deep jungles of China? You know, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, there's a big problem here, isn't there? If this book is supposed to be the Word of God, he's a miserable failure, isn't he? Because for the longest time, guys, it never made it to remote areas. Oh, but the Bible dupe has answers for that. Well, God knows the heart, and even though they didn't have the Bible, he'll judge them according to how he knows they would have responded if they had the Bible at their disposal. Well, why have the fucking Bible at your disposal at all then? If you're going to be judged based on how your heart is, where your heart is at, without having access to it, what the fuck do you need access to it for at all, son of a bitch? Why preach the gospel into all the world, as Jesus said, if it's not needed and he's going to judge you based on how you... Do you see my point? God fucking damn it. There's another reason to bitch slap Bible dupes who want to shove that book up your ass. What bullshit. Look at the crap that they come up with, guys, when you ask them hard-hitting questions like that that they just can't answer. They got to make up shit like that. Is that pathetic or what? What a lame-ass excuse. They can't admit that this book was simply invented in a small, piss-ass country in the Middle East 2,500 years ago, had no bearing on the lives of anybody else but the assholes that created it. But yet, look how it's taken off because of propaganda like Plato was talking about here. The illusion is created that this has been around forever. So now people, so many millions of people think they must follow it because so many others are doing it and they've been doing it for so long now. When it's nothing but a bunch of horse shit. But the very fact that for the longest time, the bulk of the human population never even heard of this goddamn thing, let alone was following it. What kind of a god would give you an instruction manual that never took off for the longest time, that left the bulk of the human population in the dark? Are you fucking kidding me? Oh, Bible dupes. You have a lot to be ashamed of. You really do. The pride you take in your holy book is so completely without justification, without warrant. You ought to be incredibly embarrassed. You've been duped by one of the most powerful deceptions that this deceiving tribe has ever pawned off on the human race. Human race. Another false term that I still continue to use. Human species. Anyway, let's finish this quote here. For Plato, as a social engineer, a system of censorship and universal compulsory education by which the state could maintain control of theology, of literature, of the arts, of all forms of public discourse, knowledge about the world and of the nation's past was considered essential to allow the effective indoctrination and culturalization and social control of all members of the ideal city-state he envisioned. Holy shit. Compulsory public education, ladies and gentlemen. This has been on the drawing board for a long time now, hasn't it? Absolutely. Why do we have compulsory education, state-funded education in this country? Which wasn't that way until only a few decades ago, guys. There might have been, you know, some influence from Washington, but not complete, total, centralized control. That didn't begin until Mr. Sephardim stole office by murdering having murdered his predecessor there so he could seize power. That didn't happen until Mr. L.B. frickin' Sephardic J. That's when the complete takeover of education by Washington took place in this country. Prior to that time, local communities, local towns, for the most part, you know, had control over education. Parents had, much more of a say. You didn't have the bullshit that you have now. High school graduates actually could read past a third grade level. Since this centralized takeover, the standards have gone right down the shitter, haven't they? And that's the whole reason why it was taken over, you see. This age-old agenda that Plato put on parchment, which, of course, he learned from his little tribal string pullers, is what was put into action, guys, beginning with LBJ. For the very reasons he said, to destroy a nation's culture and to completely mind control the populace. That, coupled with the effects of the boob tube and the movie screen and on it goes. But that's a very, very important part of it. Not only does education help you to reach the swelling masses, but it helps you reach them at a critical point in their lives when they're very young. You need to influence them at the earliest ages, the earliest stages of the mind's development. Because what is instilled in those crucial years will remain with them later into adult life, for the most part. Very few will ever be able to break through from their programming. You know, I think I was destined to be a rebel and to figure this bullshit system out. Because when I was a kid, guys, going to school, I hated the fact that I was being forced to go every day to a place I couldn't stand, to deal with mostly asshole teachers that just made me cringe, and a great many of the students, too, I couldn't stand. Most of them were little pricks. I hated the clickiness of it, the phoniness of the, wanting to be popular and accepted by the crowd. I could give a shit about being accepted by the crowd. I never cared, never, ever cared. I just never fell for any of that chicanery. And I was amazed to see how many other kids did. I've always had a small circle of friends. Not that I thought I was better than everybody. You know, it wasn't an issue of pride. I just couldn't stand phoniness. The kids I hung out with were the same way. They couldn't stand phoniness. And they weren't part of the popular in crowd. Fuck the popular in crowd. I couldn't have told you if you asked me why I didn't like the in crowd, why I was turned off by that. I couldn't have elaborated in any detail. I really didn't know myself. I just smelled a rat with the whole thing and, you know, distanced myself from it. I just did it because I had to. You know, I went to school because I had to. I just went through the motions, but it never really held any sway with me. I would study to get good grades, but most of the information I could give a shit about it. To me, it was just a stupid formality. Yeah, just grit your teeth through it, whatever. What time is it? Good, I get to leave in an hour. You know, that type of thing. Never, 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 ever did it hold me and have me believing in it and thinking that it was anything legitimate. I couldn't tell you why it was illegitimate, but I always sensed that it was. I knew that it was. But most people, they go through life, they never question this shit. It's been shoved down their throats from the time they were young, and so into adult life, because they were told this system is legitimate, it functions the way you think it does. Oh, there might be a few bad boys, a few bad apples that get stirred in with a bunch here and there, but the system itself is untouchable. And we got a lot of dumbass adults today because they were trained to be dumbasses from the time they were very young guys. They know, once again, that a few are going to figure it out, but they're not worried about those few because they're easy to write off. As long as they don't try to climb the ladder and get too high up there, well, then there's any familiar number of means of silencing them or just completely demonizing them to the point where no one's going to listen to them, boycotting them so that they really don't get a public voice, you know. They know that that type of mind control programming from the time they're very young, that will work with most people. That's why Plato called for compulsory goddamn education. Just what we have today, isn't it? Just what most countries have. And once again, for no other reason but that, to control people. People are led to believe that education is required for the betterment of society. Why, the government wants you to get education so you can contribute to society and advance society. Ah, shut up. Oh, that might be the case with a few. The few that they know don't have a conscience and seem to have some good academic skills, oh, they'll climb you right up the ladder as long as you know how to lick their ass. You demonstrate those qualities, yes, they'll climb you right up that ladder because they can make use of you as one of their little lapdogs. But if you're an independent thinker and have academic skills, they're going to make sure they fuck you every way they can so you never get ahead. All right, guys, short break, right back.
Here at Renegade Broadcasting do a great job presenting to you cutting-edge and hard-hitting content every day of the week. They do this all for free because they care about getting the truth out there and ensuring that we and future generations have a future worth living for. Our enemies have an endless supply of money to finance their operations, but we're able to work wonders working on a shoestring budget. If you appreciate a host's content, visit their archive page and find out how to support them, or even send a nice thank you note. We all appreciate it. Thank you for your consideration. Now back to the show.
Me.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Guys, welcome back. Looks like I will finish these notes today. What do you know? And probably be off onto another. Yeah, actually, we'll probably be starting another topic before the show's over. And like I said, that will conclude our current Bible bashing rant. Oh, we'll be returning to this subject again in the future. Lots more to come. Like I said, I just finished some very interesting notes the other day, or yesterday, I think, or whatever, the night before last. Very, very interesting stuff. My God. No end to it. But anyway, let's look at some New Testament examples now of plagiarism of Plato and Greek Hellenism. We saw that with the Old Testament. Look in the new now. Got the same thing going on there. There's no question that Christianity from its earliest days was influenced by Hellenism, just as Judaism itself was, from whence Christianity sprang. And, you know, keep in mind that at this time, the first century, Hellenism was still, a major influence in the world, in the Middle East and abroad. Roman Empire had adopted a lot of Hellenistic ideas. And so it's only natural that you see that popping up in the Middle East at this time. All we need do is look at some revealing quotes along this line from early Christian fathers, and we could see the Hellenistic influence in early Christianity. And the early church fathers were aware of this, admitted it. Augustine, for example, he said, "The utterance of Plato, the most pure and bright in all philosophy, scattering the clouds of error." He had nothing but praise for Plato. He said, "I found that whatever truth I had read in the Platonists was in the writings of Paul combined with the exaltation of thy grace," referring to the Lord, his grace. The writings of Paul, he said, Paul's writings, he recognized, reflected Platonian thought. Eusebius had this to say, "Plato is the only Greek who has attained the porch of Christian truth." Clement of Alexandria stated, "Before the advent of the Lord, philosophy was necessary to the Greeks for righteousness, and now it becomes conducive to piety, being a kind of preparatory training to those who attain to faith. For God is the cause of all good things, but of some primarily, as of the Old and New Testaments, and of others by consequence as philosophy. Perchance, too, philosophy was given to the Greeks directly and primarily, for philosophy was a schoolmaster to bring to the Hellenic mind, to bring the Hellenic mind to Christ. Can you imagine that? He's implying here that God inspired, well, you know what he really means. God inspired Plato and other Greek writers. What he meant was the tribe was present there, exerting their influence, of course. But anyway, he's implying here that those writings were an early stage of God's revelation, and that it was designed to ultimately lead people to Christ. Oh, God. It goes on to say, philosophy, therefore, was a preparation paving the way for him who is perfected in Christ. What a crock. But anyway, the point I'm making here is these early church fathers recognized the importance of Greek Hellenism and the influence it had on Christianity. They even associate Paul's writings with Plato. Of course, like I said, everything in that goddamn book is plagiarism, ladies and gentlemen. And a good deal of that plagiarism, both Old Testament and New, was from the Greeks. Seeing what we have just discovered about Plato's New World Order philosophy, this should really cause us to second-guess Christianity as a benevolent force in the world, wouldn't you say? You know, there's Christians out there that, you know, are against the New World Order, or at least they think they are. And they might really mean it when they say that they're against it, but the reality is they're really not against it, because their holy book is all for it. Their holy book was the very first written blueprint for global domination, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, unfortunately, a good many among them probably won't recognize it for what it is once it fully manifests itself out in the open, because their little buddies, the chosen ones, are going to be the head of the whole goddamn thing. They're going to see that as a good sign. Jesus is coming soon. God has risen his chosen ones up. They probably won't even recognize it for what it is. Anyway, but you know, we don't just have to look at the Old Testament to see that that book endorses the New World Order. The New Testament does too. Look at what Luke 21:24 says. This is Jesus speaking here. He said, Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Jesus here was looking forward to a time when the time of the Gentiles ruling the world would come to an end. What does he mean by that? Because a time is coming, Jesus said, when his tribe would be ruling the world instead. Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot until the time of the Gentiles is over. Then Jerusalem won't be trampled anymore. It will do the trampling itself. That's what the little first century insurrectionist Jesus is talking about here, ladies and gentlemen. He's looking forward to the Jew world order that we were just reading about from Plato. But the Platonic influence can really be seen in the New Testament when we look at what the apostles wrote in their epistles about submission to government authority. I cited some of these, last week? Let's look at them again in this light now, in this Platonian perspective. Peter wrote in 2 Peter 2:10-15, he said, but chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Once again, look what Peter's doing here. He's associating those who despise the government. You should love the government. Those who despise the government are ranked up there, or should I say down there, with those who lust after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness. Ah, shut up. You see how he's got to demonize people who question the government or despise the government for its corrupt shenanigans and crimes? Those who despise that are just as vile as those who lust after the flesh and uncleanness. This is propaganda extraordinaire, ladies and gentlemen. This is Platonian propaganda, or a tribal propaganda that Plato copied. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignities, whereas angels, which are greater in power and might, bring not railing accusations against them before the Lord. Peter is saying that these people are blaspheming. Blaspheming the angels. Excuse me. Why, if they question the government, they're claiming to be better than the angels, because the angels don't even do that. He's grabbing at anything he can here to make the case that you're not to question the government. Just what Plato called for. Just what the tribe called for in Plato copy. Peter goes on to say, but these, as natural brute beasts made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not. Are you freaking kidding me? So Peter is saying, if you question the government and call it evil, you don't understand it. I understand it, and I recognize that the government is something good that you need to follow and respect and praise. Holy mind-blowing horseshit. Notice he says, these, meaning these people who question the government and despise it for its criminal activities, these, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things they understand not. He's saying that if you question the government, you're not only wrong and are a sinner for doing that, but you need to be destroyed as a brute beast. Imagine that, guys. So, when you see the Inquisition and the Crusades and all the mass slaughtering of anyone who even looked at the Catholic Church funny, can you really condemn them for that? They're actually following this playbook, aren't they? Or weren't they? They were doing exactly what this book teaches from Genesis to goddamn Revelation. And shall utterly perish, Peter says, in their own corruption, and shall receive the reward of unrighteousness. Is Peter following Plato here, just like the early church fathers said? Of course he is. Or whoever wrote this goddamn book under the name of Peter, who knows? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Same philosophy, isn't it? Exact same barking thing. Of course it is. They shall utterly perish in their own corruption. Do you see how this book teaches you not to question the government? If you're a Christian and you're exposing things like 9/11, the bailout and all the other fiascos, the LIBOR scandal, you're actually in rebellion against your holy book. You better check yourself. You either need to kiss the government's ass or give up your religion, one or the other. You can't play both sides of the fence here. This book won't allow you to do that. According to this book, you're a sinner who's worthy to be destroyed. You're worthy of damnation. In fact, you are going to be damned, according to Peter. They shall utterly perish in their own corruption. Imagine that. If you expose the corruption of the government, you're corrupt yourself. Oh, we're in spin cycle now, baby. High gear. Anyway, it goes on to say, and shall receive the reward of unrighteousness as they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings. while they feast with you. Jesus Christ Almighty. It's not enough that he said they need to be destroyed and that they're going to perish. He goes on and on and on. Guys, I'll tell you, you'd be hard-pressed to find any more staunch, obnoxious condemnation of any other sinner in this entire goddamn book called the Bible than what you find here in this passage, where Peter is condemning simply those who question the government and call it evil and say they despise it for all its evils and corruptions and crimes. You won't find a greater, more lengthy condemnation in the entire goddamn Bible than what you have here. He goes on and on for an entire paragraph, sentence after sentence, from every conceivable angle, making sure you understand that people who question the government are as thoroughly evil as you can get. He demonizes them and demoralizes them and degrades them and condemns them to frickin' eternal hell simply because they... Holy shit! Reading this passage would lead you to believe that questioning the government must be the most evil thing you can do, because Peter just goes on and 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 on. He's not done. He goes on. Let me finish this. Having eyes full of adultery. Notice, Jesus Christ, you gotta love it, man. So if you question the government now, you have eyes full of adultery. You know, that was the ultimate no-no back then, right? So now you are, you're a sex-crazed maniac now. Watch out, husbands, you know, government protesters are after your wives. And that cannot cease from sin. This is a fucking comedy book, and it would be a lot more funny if it wasn't so goddamn pathetic. They cannot cease from sin. Who's he talking about here? God damn it. People who question the government. They can't cease from sin. Well, if questioning the government is sin, well, I'm fucking totally guilty. I confess, yes. And I'm proud of it. Fuck this book. Fuck who wrote it. And you know what? Fuck most of those who follow it, too. The obnoxious ones. Yes. Fuck them all. This book, guys, is toxic. It's a toxic weed. And even though you might pour poison on it, God damn it, it's going to take you years to completely free yourself from its toxic influence. Its roots are still going to be there, even though they're rotting in the soil of your mind. The influence is still going to be there. The sooner you fucking pour that poison on that frickin' toxic weed, the better. Get rid of it. Like I said, if you're a Bible dupe and you're opposed to the government, you're going to hell, according to this book. So, like I said, you either need to stop protesting the government so you can continue on with your little Jesus fantasy world, or recognize this book is full of shit, toss it in the scrap heap once and for all, and become a real truther. Otherwise, you're just playing make-believe and fooling your own self. Peter isn't done yet, though. Let's go on here with this passage. Listen to what else he says. Those who question the government are beguiling unstable souls. A heart they have exercised with covetous practices. Cursed children, which have forsaken the right way and are gone astray following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. Like I said, guys, if anybody knows of any passage in the Bible that condemns any other alleged sin more than this, let me know, because I don't know of any passage that does that. This is one, you know, this is the passage. This is the record holder right here. This passage condemns this so-called sin more than any other sinner, more than any other sin in the entire Bible. So according to Peter here, or whoever the hell wrote this book of frickin' nonsense, whoever wrote this passage, would have us believe that questioning the government is the most vile of all sins. Can you get more Platoan, Platoistic than that? What a crock of shit. Anyway, Peter also wrote, as if that wasn't enough, in 1 Peter 2:13-17, he says, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as to the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to command those who commend those who do right." What government has ever done this, ladies and gentlemen? Especially in the past 35 frickin' 100 years, when all governments have been controlled by these son of a bitches. What government has ever done this? Punished evildoers and rewarded those who do good? Holy mindfuck! Anyway, he goes on to say, "For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people who question the government, like as free people, but do not live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves." Don't you want to be a slave? Yeah, yeah. "Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone." Oh, yeah. Whatever. "Everyone who believes like you do, that is. Love the family of believers." See? There you go. That's what he's talking about. "Show proper respect to everyone." Who's the everyone? "Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor." Honor the emperor. Holy shit, guys. Doesn't this remind you of what the great insurrectionist of the first century Jesus said? Don't do as the Pharisees do and the scribes, but do as they say, because they sit in Moses' seat. Remember that? All the while, he's calling them, vipers and hypocrites, and condemning them for not following the great sacred scriptures, but instead following their own traditions. All the while he's condemning them for that, he's telling people to follow them. Whoa! And to respect them because of the office they hold. They sit in the seat of the great Moses. Wow! Hey! Three cheers for the great Jesus. What a great teacher he was. What a great example setter he was. Even when I first became aware that the Bible was full of shit, guys, it took me a while before I could actually say, "Fuck you, Jesus Christ." It took me a while before I could actually say that, because in the back of my mind, I still had that fear that was so ingrained in me for so long. I had that idea that, I figured out the Trinity was a fraud and didn't believe he was God, but I believed he was the divine-natured Son of God, that he was God's right-hand man. And so even though I knew the Bible was full of shit, somehow, it's amazing, I still couldn't go there. I needed to study more to realize, wow, not only is this book full of shit, not only is this great Jesus somebody who died 2,000 years ago and he's still dead in the ground, thank fucking heavens, but I guess it doesn't matter because his toxic influence is still alive and well. But, not only did I just couldn't let go for the longest time. It was probably a good year or two before I could finally realize that not only was this Jesus character a fraud and was nothing like what he was told he was, but he was actually fucking evil. Evil! It took me a while before I realized I not only cannot believe in this Jesus character anymore, I need to piss on him. I need to take a shit on his goddamn face. He's evil! Well, look what tribe he was associated with. Should we be surprised? But seriously, I'm telling you, folks, if you don't feel that way, about this book, about its God, and about its junior, its God's little junior boy. If you don't have an absolute vile detestation for the whole goddamn mess, you're not understanding it. You need to look into it more to see just how evil it is, so that you can come to the point where you can say, fuck you, Jesus Christ, you little piece of shit. Anyway, I don't even need to read Romans 13 again. I already did that last week. But I cite Romans 13, 1-7. Just more Platonian mind screw, you know, follow the government, don't question the government, BS. Remembering what Plato said about slaves being the property of their masters, notice what Peter wrote in the very next verse from what we just cited a minute ago, 1 Peter 2:18. We left off a minute ago, 1 Peter 2:13 to 17. Yeah. In the very next verse, Peter said, slaves, in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. Imagine that, guys? Peter is not only saying, be happy that you're a slave and kiss your slave master's ass, but he's saying, kiss their ass even if they do what's evil. Can you imagine that? Even if they command what's wrong or what's evil or what's harsh, or, you know, even if they're harsh to you, if they're assholes, bastards, kiss their ass anyway. That's as Platonian as you can get, isn't it? Paul said the same thing in Colossians 3:22. Slaves, obey your human masters in all things, not only when they are watching you because you want to gain their approval, but do it with a sincere heart because of your reverence for the Lord. Unbelievable. All right, guys, another break, right back.
Over 1,200 rabbis. Can you imagine getting 1,200 rabbis to agree on one thing? But agree they did, and what they agreed was to ask our elected officials not to halt or even to limit the United States Refugee Admissions Program. And it's not just Hayez. Jewish organizations of all kinds across the spectrum of Judaism are issuing statements in support of refugees. These have included the Orthodox Union, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and so many of the Jewish organizations that you've heard are co-sponsors of this event.
Thank you.
You know, I said I wasn't going to read the Romans passage again, but you know what? Let me read it again, because it's just so over-the-top outrageous, man. This has got to be one of the most despicable, disgusting displays of bullshit propaganda in this entire book. Here it is. Here's this book's bullshit in all of its glory. Romans 13, 1-7, really quick here. Paul wrote, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers," the government, "for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God." Holy gee, can you imagine, guys? Think of that. Paul is saying that God is behind the George Bushes, the Barack Obamas, the friggin' Hillary Clinton. It goes on to say, well, actually, I agree with Paul. God, quote-unquote, is behind them. Yeah, oh, he is. That God with fangs, horns, and claws. Yeah, because their ideology is exactly in line with his. So I'm not arguing with Paul's assessment. I'm arguing with the way Christians view the whole world. You know, their Jesus is supposed to be loving, right? Compassionate and caring and blah, 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 blah. They want to say that a compassionate, caring, loving God is behind these fucking monsters. Anyway, Paul goes on to say, "Whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation." The same message Peter gave, isn't it? Of course. "For rulers are not a terror to good works."
Oh, really?
"But to the evil." Oh, so yeah, the CIA doesn't assassinate people who whistleblow. "Wilt thou then not be afraid of that power," Paul says, "do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same." The government will praise you if you do good. Oh, and don't we see that all the time? "For he is the minister of God," the government leader. "He is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he bears not the sword in vain." In other words, if you question the government and the government kills you, well, you got your just deserts. So all of the CIA assassinations, according to Paul, are not only justified, but they're good. You're going to tell me I'm off the wall for saying this book is a piece of shit? You're going to tell me I'm off the wall for saying, fuck you, Jesus? People, look at this for what it is. If you're shocked by me saying things like that, you're not getting it. It has you fooled. Paul goes on to say, "For he," the government official, "is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." "Wherefore, you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, not only for fear of the government coming down on you, but also for conscience sake." You shouldn't question the government for conscience sake. You should feel guilty for questioning the government. You can only have a clear conscience if you don't question the government, Paul says. "For this cause, pay you tribute also," pay your taxes, "for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing." Oh, wow. Could you be more full of shit than this? "Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom is due, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Oh, shut up. Anyway, let's move on here. I'm glad I didn't skip that, because that there is the cream of the crop, baby. No wonder the early church fathers talked about Christianity following right along line with Plato and other Hellenistic writings. Yes, yes. Absolutely. As the centuries marched on, many other Hellenistic influences crept into the Christian church, of course, which still remain in place till this day and are upheld as sacred doctrine and yet aren't even found in the Bible. For example, the doctrine of man having an immortal soul, a conscious entity that departs, you know, that departs the body at death, came from Hellenism, ladies and gentlemen, but is actually not found anywhere in the Bible. I think I did some shows on that in the past. Yeah. Talking about how the Bible actually teaches when you die, you take the old dirt nap until the great Jesus comes again and raises you back to life miraculously. But it doesn't teach that when you die, you go to this good place if you're a good boy and a bad place if you're a bad boy. That came from Hellenism. The concept, of hell and even purgatory, you know, all that crap, which Protestants don't believe in, but, you know, the Catholic Church certainly does. All that came from Hellenism. Purgatory is, if you're not quite that bad, but yet not quite that good, not bad enough for hell, but not good enough for heaven. It's a temporary holding tank. Oh, and how much fat wads of cash that's generated for the church, too, over the years. Telling people that if you pay the right sum of money, we'll do a mass for your dead loved one, and you can get them freed from the confines of purgatory, and they can go to heaven. If you don't pay enough, though, they'll stay in purgatory. They might even wind up in hell. And you know what happens then? They never leave once they go there. What a fucking... God shit. That concept isn't even in the Holy Book, by the way. The not-so-holy book. Purgatory, not there. Not there. Not there at all. They invented it. But who cares, because what is in that book is itself invented anyway, but you understand my point. So much of what has been taught and is taught by the Catholic Church is nothing more than their traditions they've invented over the centuries, guys. Not even in that damn book. Mary worship, where in the world can you find even the slightest hint in the New Testament of anybody ever bowing to, praying to, admiring, worshiping goddamn Mary, or for that matter, any of the apostles, them being honored after their death and having medals struck up in their honor and carrying them around for good luck, blessing themselves with holy water. What a crock of shit. Anyway, list goes on and on. Indeed, guys, there's nothing unique about Old or New Testament teachings. Nothing. About Judaism, Christianity, Islam, it's all plagiarism, borrowed from the pagan world, and a good deal of it from the Greeks, from Plato. Unbelievable, man. Anyway, that completes that discussion. And that completes our current Bible bashing rant. So we'll return to that at some future time, a month or two, I'll be back. But, in the meantime, let's get off onto some more important topics. So I'll start this, and obviously it'll carry over into Monday's show. But my next topic here is going to be Mr. Scalia. You know, when he died earlier this year, I was debating whether I was going to do a show or not, and I figured, he was a phony anyway. And he was. You know, you don't get a position on the Supreme Court frickin' bench, guys, unless you're a sellout piece of shit. However, he was murdered. No question about it. But, and even though I suspected foul play, I figured, he's a piece of garbage. Why bother? Who cares? You know, good riddance. However, this murder is very significant and has become even more significant in recent weeks. Some very interesting information has surfaced about his death that does warrant our attention. So I did throw some notes together on this subject. And I'll be putting some other notes together too on the Hillary Clinton pedo ring. I had a listener send me some info on it the other day, and it goes much deeper than I imagined. It's and the evidence of it is absolutely through the roof. It's unfrickin' real, man. You know, we talk about the Franklin cover up and several other pedo rings like that over the years, but people tend to think, if they even hear about this stuff at all or pay any attention to it or acknowledge that it's happening, a lot of people are in denial. If they even do that, though, if they admit it, they tend to think that, well, you know, yeah, that happened, but it's over and done with now. Once that got exposed, that exposure put fear in government leaders so that, you know, that they're going to make sure that doesn't happen anymore. And the FBI is onto it now, and no government leader, even if he has leanings in that direction, is going to indulge in that anymore like that, because, oh, bullshit. Bullshit. It has always been this way, and unfortunately, if things continue as they have been, it always will be this way. All that changes is, you know, they try to watch their step and cover their crimes a little more carefully. But no, nothing changes, guys. When you have that kind of evil, that kind of corruption going on, it doesn't go away, baby. If anything, the problem gets worse as time goes on. They just become a little better at covering it up. Anyway, I don't know when I'll put those notes together. Probably sometime next week. So it won't. I won't probably be presenting that right after this set of notes. But I'll be doing that soon, because that's really important. Even though the little bitch, isn't going to be occupying the Oval Office, doesn't matter. This is something current. It's just mind-blowing, man. The shit that these bastards get away with. By the way, even though, of course, you know, we've got congressmen, senators that have been pedophiles in both parties, it's not limited to any one party. Most of these pedophile rings over the years have involved mostly Republicans. But this one here is almost exclusively a Democrat operation. Again, not that that matters. They all suck. They're all criminals, and they all engage in the same frickin' filth. But this one here is... Because, you know, that's what a lot of people... A lot of Democrats who were on the bandwagon exposing the Franklin cover-up, a lot of them have said, you know, see how evil those Republicans are? Oh, knock it off. Well, for those of that ilk, you know, it's time to eat some crow now, because, yeah, here you have a more endemically Democratic pedo ring going on. But like I said, we'll get to that, you know, probably the next week or the week after I'll present those notes. Jaw-dropping stuff, guys. This thing is big. It's very big. And they usually are, aren't they? Even when the stories break in mainstream media, there's a lot of damage control. People think, oh, that was just that local college president over there in Pennsylvania, you know. They don't realize that, oh, no. It's much bigger. Much bigger. You know, usually involves the federal bunglers of investigation, the CIA, top politicians in Washington, you know, on and on and on. But anyway, let's look at the Scalia thing. Antonin Gregory Scalia, or Scalia, was Associate Justice of the Supreme Court from 1986, appointed by Mr. I Can't Remember Reagan, until his death in 2016, early this year. Wow, exactly 30 years. Jeez, I didn't even think of that. I should look at the date he was appointed and the date he died. Was he appointed in January of 86? That's interesting. Was it on the same date? They like repeating, reoccurring dates. They killed the poor bastard the same day he was appointed. Anyway, he was described as the intellectual anchor for the originalist and textualist position in the court's conservative wing. Scalia went to Georgetown University and obtained his law degree from Harvard Law School, and then spent 6 years in a Cleveland law firm before he became a law school professor at the University of Virginia. Just to give you a little background on this guy. In the early 70s, he served in the Nixon and Ford administrations. I didn't know that until I started researching this show. That's interesting. Eventually, he served as assistant attorney general back at that time. He spent most of the Carter years teaching at the University of Chicago, where he became one of the first faculty advisors to the fledgling Federalist Society. Federalists. Anyway, in 1982, Reagan appointed him as judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. And later, of course, in 86, appointing him to the Supreme Court position, he was unanimously confirmed by the Senate, becoming the first Italian-American justice. Scalia served on the court for nearly 30 years, during which time... okay, so it wasn't to the day. It wasn't quite 30. During which time he espoused a conservative jurisprudence and ideology, advocating, again, textualism in statutory interpretation and originalism in constitutional interpretation, you know, claiming to want to go back to what the founding fathers had intended, original intent position. Whatever that means. And quite frankly, who cares? Original intent. Well, I should say, for the most part, who cares? Because, as we've seen, most of the founding fathers are pieces of shit anyway. Original intent was not for you to have freedom, just the illusion of the creation of frickin' freedom. But, you know, some of them were sincere. So if you want to talk original intent, well, let's talk about the few that were sincere in what they intended. Anyway, Scalia was a strong defender, or at least that's what he found himself off as, of the powers of the executive branch, believing presidential power should be paramount in many areas. Well, I'm sure he wasn't pretending there. I'm sure he was doing what he was told to do. They want the president as a dictator, and that's why he was for federalism, guys. Federalism is all for dictatorship. Centralized control in the hands of a few, or in the hands of El Presidente. He opposed affirmative action and other policies that treated minorities as social groups. Along this line, he once stated, quote, "To pursue the concept of racial entitlement, even for the most admirable and benign of purposes, is to reinforce and preserve for future mischief the way of thinking that produced race slavery, race privilege, and race hatred in the eyes of government." Anyway, you know, who knows to what degree he was speaking sincerely, nobody can say. Just the fact that he had that high position, I don't trust the bastard. But they killed him for a reason, guys. He was definitely murdered, as we're going to see. The evidence of that is absolutely overwhelming and undeniable. He died under extremely mysterious circumstances, and the events that followed his death were just as mysterious. We'll get to that probably not until Monday, but anyway, Scalia filed separate opinions in many cases, and often castigated the court's majority in his minority opinions using scathing language. So he was somewhat of a, you know, a radical, a rebel. Was that part of the act, or, you know, did he mean it? Who knows? But he was known as being a rebel and denouncing other Supreme Court justices. Anyway, on February 13th, 2016, Scalia was found dead under a pillow at the Cibolo Creek Ranch in Shafter, Texas. Shafter, that's an interesting word, isn't it? Interesting name. He got shafted at Shafter. But anyway, he was found under a pillow. We're supposed to believe that, you know, he just died in his sleep or whatever, died from a heart attack. Under a pillow. His death, again, was very mysterious, and he was cremated soon thereafter without an autopsy being conducted. Nothing to be suspicious about there, right? How many times, guys, have we seen this before? Yeah, that's what they did with John Paul I, remember? Who died, by the way, 33 days into his pontificate. On the 33rd day, he dies under mysterious circumstances right after his evening coffee got delivered to his bedroom. And he's buried the next day without an autopsy. Anyway, I hate to leave a cliffhanger over the weekend, but that's going to be what winds up happening. Well, before we get into the details of his death, let me relate a few things here about he himself. He was not necessarily a good guy, like I said. He wasn't without his problems. And what else can you expect, guys? When you hold a high position like that in government, things are so bad today, and they've been so bad for a long time now. In previous decades, you could slip through the cracks if you were a decent person. You never really got anywhere because you were up against a mountain of resistance. And in fact, sometimes, you know, you'd find yourself 6 feet under, in fact, if you got too pushy. But, you know, today we've reached a point where you can't slip through the cracks anymore. If you're a decent human being endowed with a conscience and morals, you're never, ever going to get your foot in the door. You know, that's what Jesse Ventura concluded. You know, say what you want about the guy, but I think he's fairly sincere. I've interviewed him several times over the years. He seems to be a pretty decent guy, although unfortunately he's been brushing shoulders with some very sleazy individuals, so they probably have gotten to him by now. Who knows? I haven't talked to him for a long time. But years ago, I believe him when he said this. He said he got involved in politics, you know, became the governor of Minnesota, because he wanted to make a positive difference in the world. But he says, I got out of it because once I got in there and I saw just how bad things were, I realized that as an individual, there's nothing you can do. You can't, absolutely can't, unless you're Superman or Solomon, who had superhuman strength, as long as you didn't cut your long hair, there's nothing you can do. Or Solomon, I meant to say Samson. I got my fairy tale characters mixed up. You know, unless you have superhuman powers and are impervious to bullets and swords and missiles, there's nothing you can do. He's right, absolutely right. I believe, at least at that point, when he said that, he was sincere. I don't know where he's at now. I had him on, in fact, I think it was the last time I interviewed him. I mentioned the J factor. And he wasn't arguing. In fact, I think he had to concede. Yeah, they do own the banks, don't they? They do own Hollywood. So that was pretty interesting. But anyway, so Scalia, the very fact that he held a high position like this, Supreme Court justice, guys, tells you right there, the man had to be corrupt from the word go. He wouldn't have been appointed. He wouldn't have been allowed to be appointed had he not met certain requirements. And I'm not talking about plaques on his wall either. The real requirement, guys, to hold any high position anymore, in anything really, not just government, is that you have to smell like an open sewer pit. You got to be a piece of shit. That's all there is to it. Doesn't matter what your goddamn credentials are. You got to be a piece of shit. You're not a piece of shit, you're just not going to climb that ladder. That's all there is to it. Which is why I feel bad for people who, you know, got all excited to hear that Mr. Trump won the election. Oh, goddamn it, man. Come on. At what point do you finally get your head out of your ass to realize this whole thing is so goddamn monkey rigged? He became president. He was allowed to run for president for one reason and one reason only. He's a sellout piece of shit. Never, never, never would he have been allowed not only to win the election, but to have run in the first place, or, you know, to have been a major runner-up candidate. Unless he was a piece of shit. And so, you know, it might not be until late January. It might not be until frickin' August. Who knows? But sooner or later, he's going to start to show his true colors. And those of us who say, I told you so, is that going to finally do it? Probably not. Probably not. People are still going to fall for the horse shit. Still going to play the game. Shit. But anyway, before we even look into Scalia, yeah, it should be a given. If he held a high position, he's got to be a piece of shit. Kennedy, guys, was a piece of shit. At least initially. He wouldn't have became president if he wasn't. His whole family, you know. But he obviously developed a conscience. He started to try, anyway. He tried to get around. That's why they killed him. I think that might have happened with Scalia for reasons I'll explain on Monday. But first, I want to look at some of his not-so-nice deeds. He was a piece of shit. No question about it. Anyway, guys, great weekend. We'll pick up this on Monday.
This is a man called Chris Dorsey, host of the Militia Intelligence Report on Renegade Broadcasting. The Jewish, Masonic, and Vatican-run shadow government is engaged in war against the people. Join us every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, for discussion on restoration of European common law and the latest intelligence analysis. Peace and God bless.